from.
It's 4 hours Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Victor Beatty reporting another global effort to resolve the Syrian crisis. Syria's conflict will be high on the agenda for U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry, who embarks Thursday on a trip to Tunisia, Austria, and Turkey. In Vienna, world powers Saturday will launch the second round of talks on Syria's political future. Regional analyst David Lesh of Trinity University says while the talks bring 17 world powers, the UN and EU together on ways to end the nearly five-year civil war, differences remain.
There are wide gaps between many of the participants, those that support the Syrian government and those that are against the Syrian government, particularly over the disposition of Syrian President Bashar al-Assad. One of the biggest problems is the nature of the opposition, which has been fragmented from the beginning and still is fragmented.
He says Syria, along with allies Iran and Russia, view almost all the opposition in Syria as terrorists and therefore unacceptable as negotiating partners. Speaking Wednesday at a meeting on Malta among European and African officials, French President François Hollande said Africa needs more international development and aid in order to curb the flow of migrants to Europe.
L'enjeu, c'est de...
Mr. Hollande says what is at stake is to limit immigration and make development a key part of the solution. He says most migrants are from Eritrea and Sudan and called for maximum pressure on their leaders to mend a serious situation. Meanwhile, EU Foreign Policy Chief Federica Mogherini says African leaders are the key to solving the issue.
I believe that we are today in a position that was unimaginable even 7-8 months ago.
The two-day summit, which ends Thursday, is focusing on the reasons why people are leaving their home countries. Europe has offered nearly $2 billion in aid to African countries. This is VOA News. The UN says it could rush peacekeepers to Burundi if calm does not return to the East African country soon. One option would be sending in soldiers from neighboring Congo. The African Union also could intervene with a peacekeeping force. Violence exploded in April when President Pierre Nkurunziza announced his bid for a third term, a move the opposition denounced as unconstitutional. The top UN official in Iraq, Jan Kubisch, said Wednesday that Iraq's security forces are making slow but deliberate progress against self-proclaimed Islamic State fighters who control large swaths of the country's territory.
In central Iraq, the Iraqi security forces, popular mobilization forces, and tribal volunteers have retaken key areas, including Beji, which is now under government control. The pro-government forces have proven their ability to conduct military operations in several areas simultaneously. The global coalition to counter ISIL has become more effective in supporting the Iraqi security forces and the Peshmerga, both in direct military activities and training, and in providing supplies of material.
He says Iraqi forces and tribal volunteers are planning more liberation operations in areas such as the Anbar province capital, Ramadi, and the northern Kurdish region. But he cautioned the Islamic State is far from defeated, possesses the funding and military capacities to, in his words, prolong its reign of terror over large parts of Iraq. According to VOA correspondent Steve Herman, Myanmar's opposition National League for Democracy has captured at least 273 seats in Sunday's parliamentary election and needs less than 60 more to form a majority government, ending decades of military-led rule. Herman says President Thein Sein has congratulated opposition leader Aung San Suu Kyi on the apparent landslide victory.
The government is now acknowledging that and reaching out to Aung San Suu Kyi and the NLD and saying from the president's office directly that President Thein Sein will work for a peaceful transition of power.
The country's information minister says the president has accepted an offer from the Nobel laureate to hold talks once the election process is complete. Rival factions of al-Shabaab militants have clashed in Somalia in the latest sign of a split over whether to align with al-Qaeda or the Islamic State. The fighting near Sakaw in the middle Juba region killed 9 fighters and wounded 8 from both sides. Some al-Shabaab fighters have called for the group to end its longtime alliance with al-Qaeda and pledge loyalty to the IS group. Angola Wednesday marked 40 years of independence with President José Eduardo dos Santos vowing to respect human rights and basic freedoms. Mr. Dos Santos, who has been in power for 36 years, has been criticized over a crackdown on human rights. Amnesty International cites instances of arbitrary arrest, prison terms, forced disappearances, torture, and extrajudicial killings of perceived political opponents. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Thursday, November 12, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Nigerian President Buhari's new cabinet is being hailed as comprising the right people to move the country forward.
Most of them believe and are committed to the aspiration to change things the way they are done in this country. And they understand that it is something about sacrifice and service.
Sadiq Umar Abubakar Gombe is the director of the Inter-Party Advisory Council of Nigeria. Sudan explains why it prevented some opposition leaders to travel outside the country. A Zimbabwe man will appear in court later this month for insulting President Robert Mugabe. And Tanzania's new president embarks on impromptu visits to offices of the government institutions.
We need people to work hard, and the work should start from the beginning. So he started going to visit the government institutions to show that, first of all, he meant when he said people should work.
Nape Onoye is a spokesman for Tanzania's ruling Chama cha Mapinduzi Party. Somalia's prime minister comments on the ongoing Africa and European Union migration conference. And a serious El Nino impact is predicted for East and Southern Africa. Those stories, plus Mark Omar's sports and our listener of the day, are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari's new cabinet is being hailed as comprising the right people with the right attitude to move the country forward. The 36-member cabinet was sworn in yesterday, Wednesday. President Buhari said it took him nearly 6 months to decide on his cabinet because he wanted the right people for the right job. Sadiq Umar Abubakar Gombe is director of the Inter-Advisory Council of Nigeria. He said the cabinet is made up of people, most of whom are committed to the aspiration to change things the way they are currently done in Nigeria. And they understand also, they understand that being in the Buhari cabinet is about sacrifice and service.
Most of them are people that have served in one capacity or the other in Nigeria. Let me give you an example, like somebody like Fashola, which is an intelligent and exposure and experience as a governor of the most populous state of Lagos and one of the most challenging states in Nigeria, and done very well in transforming Lagos. I think he's going to do well in the sector that he's assigned as the Minister of Power, Housing and Works.
You mentioned the former Lagos State Governor Babatunde Fashola. Power in Nigeria, particularly electricity, is an on and off situation that Nigerians have complained about. Do you think he can do something about that?
You see, the issue about power sincerely is about the commitment of the government and the will to stick to whatever to make sure that they got it right. And I want to assure you that when the last administration left, we are having just about 1,200 megawatts electricity supply in the country. But now with the coming of this new administration, without putting a cover in the power sector, it has improved by more than 200% to almost 4,000 plus megawatts. Why? Because they just believe the right leadership is there, the leadership that they cannot tow along with. You know, they block a lot of leakages that are to do with corruption and other things. So the issue is that President Buhari, by his symbolic posture and transparent record, has what it takes to move the country forward. All he needed is the right people that can give the minimal support, which I believe people like Fashola have the confidence, have the commitment. And the most important thing is that I believe most of those that he surrounds himself with as ministers and members of the Federal Executive Council are people that understand the enormous challenges facing Nigeria. Most of them believe and are committed to the aspiration to change things the way they are done in this country. And they understand that it is something about sacrifice and service. Anybody that accepts to serve under Buhari administration, I want to tell you that he knows that there is a lot of commitment, patriotism needed of him, and he must be ready to serve and make a lot of sacrifice. And I'm sure it was instilled into them, and they believe in that, and they are ready for that.
For Minister of Finance, the president has appointed, this is a woman, Kemi Adeosun. What is it? The last administration had a woman finance minister. Now we have a woman finance minister.
Well, I want to assure you that now the system has started to build confidence around women to see that, yes, they are less able compared to their main counterpart in terms of discharge of responsibility and so on. And they are you can easily get results through them because they are not so hardened and also be very careful in whatever they handle. And at this present moment, particularly issues to do with finance, Nigeria needs something like that.
Now, President Buhari has confirmed speculation that he was going to be taking over the oil portfolio. He has done that. Is this good or bad?
I think it's very good because actually President Buhari has all the experience and he is one of those Nigerians that have known the nitty-gritty and the in-out of the oil industry. And this is the mainstream of the Nigerian economy.
Sadiq Omar Abubakar Gombe is the director of the Inter-Party Advisory Council of Nigeria. He was speaking with me from the capital, Abuja. The spokesman for Tanzania's ruling Chamacha Mapinduzi CCM party says President John Magufuli's impromptu visits to government institutions are aimed at ensuring accountability and improving work ethics among public sector workers. 3 days after assuming office, Magufuli went on announced to the Ministry of Finance and the Muhimbili National Hospital. He transferred the hospital's executive director and dissolved the health board after expressing concern about the poor hygienic conditions there and lack of drugs and essential functioning equipment. CCM spokesman Nape Noya said Magufuli's action is in line with his campaign promise to Tanzanians to restore confidence in public institutions.
We promised the Tanzanians that we are going to insist on hard working. And that's why we are saying of hapani kazi. We mean people to work hard. And the work should start from the beginning. So he started going to visit the government institutions, several areas, to show that, first of all, he meant when he said people should work. And as you said it correctly, we want to stop people working as usual. We want people to work hard. And we think this is going to change. In many places now you can hear people working, you can hear people calling each other to work hard.
Nape, some people are saying that for the accountability that he promised Tanzanians to ensure that government workers are accountable to the people, there has to be an implementation of policy to be permanent. Will that happen?
Yes, of course. Because, you know, you can have policies in place, but if you don't have proper people to implement the policies can remain in the cupboard and nothing will be implemented. So we need to have policies, and I believe we have a relatively very good policy, but poorly implemented. And if we want them to be implemented, we need to change the culture of the people. This culture of not working, this culture of using public offices as a place to go and make stories. We want this one to change. And if you look at what Magufuli is doing, he's trying to change this culture. To make sure that if you are given a public office, you use your time to work. This is what Magufuli is doing.
But President Magufuli has also decided to ban ministers from traveling out of the country, saying that the envoys or ambassadors or high commissioners of Tanzania outside the country should do the work of selling Tanzania to the world. What is the significance of this move?
This is maybe because of the package they get by traveling abroad, comparing to traveling to the villages. And Magufuli actually has took this step to not to stop, but at least to reduce these trips.
Nape Unoya is the spokesman for Tanzania's ruling Chamacha Mapinduzi party. He spoke with reporter Peter Clotty from the commercial capital, Dar es Salaam. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Barte in Washington. Today is Thursday, November 12, and please send your comments and opinions to Daybreak Africa at voanews.com. Daybreak Africa time is 15 minutes past the hour. French President François Hollande says Africa needs more international development aid in order to curb the flow of migrants from African countries. Speaking at a meeting of more than 60 leaders from both Africa and the European Union, Hollande said unless the EU delivers in terms of aid, the migration crisis that has sent hundreds of thousands of people fleeing to Europe this year will continue. Somali Prime Minister Omar Abdelrashid Shamaki is one of the African leaders attending the EU summit, which began Wednesday and continues today, Thursday, in Malta. Prime Minister Shamaki says the root causes of migration is war, poverty, and bad governance coupled with corruption.
Hopefully, we're going to discuss issues of root causes of this migration, the issue of war, conflicts, and poverty. And also we're going to address how I think we can deal with migration in terms of saving lives and somehow discussing legal migration instead of illegal all the time. Actually, yes, the root causes of migration is well known. It's war, it's poverty, it's lack of opportunity for the youth, it's bad governance and corruption. All of these issues are the issues that have really kind of fed into this, but I think this is going to be an opportunity for both African leaders and European leaders to address those issues.
Omar Abdelrashid Shamaki is Somalia's prime minister and one of the African leaders attending the EU summit on migration. A spokesman for Sudan President Omar al-Bashir has been explaining why several opposition leaders were prevented from traveling to France and their passports confiscated. The Secretary General of the Opposition Alliance of National Forces says Sudan's National Intelligence and Security Services prevented the political secretary of the Sudanese Communist Party and the chairman of the Unified National Unionist Party from traveling to Paris to participate in a meeting to discuss the agenda for the dialogue preparatory meeting that was scheduled to be held November 18 in Addis Ababa under the auspices of the African Union. Sudan's Information Minister Ahmed Bilal said the decision to ban the opposition leaders from leaving the country was made by the Internal Committee of the National Dialogue.
In fact, actually, it's not the government, but this is actually a resolution from the Internal Committee for the Dialogue, the 7+7, the higher committee for the dialogue. We decided that 85 or 90% of the Sudanese they're rejecting any sort of negotiations or dialogue outside the country. We have outside only armed opposition, which are the rebels. We recognize this. We signed with them a document in Addis Ababa last year, plus Sadiq al-Mahdi, the Ummah leader party. This is also because he signed this document with them. Otherwise, for all others who are inside Sudan, there is no actually any point of view that they can go outside. They can join here inside. Part of them, they are actually part of the roadmap which we have signed and which is leading now the dialogue. So we know that the Communist Party, this Mohammed al-Khatib, you are talking about, if he goes outside or inside, he will not join. But he is going outside actually to make more disturbance and to make those they shouldn't come here in Sudan.
But Mr. Minister, I mean, if your government is promoting the idea of national dialogue, don't you think respectful people, people like the opposition leader, should be allowed to travel where they want to go? That is in your country's interest.
No. Actually, for this reason, that is only. They said that they want to make rallies outside their quarter. They want to make the freedom and expression and movement inside. Everything now, what we have seen, example fulfilled. Nobody is objecting that, and they hold actually more than 3-4 meetings gathering outside their borders, and they said what they like. The question is that why they are going outside? We will not at all agree for this. The dialogue should be transferred outside Sudan. That's why.
So what does that do to the national dialogue now?
Nothing. Actually, I tell you, the majority of Sudanese are now joining the dialogue. The Communist Party is a very small party with no significance. And now they have also some problems, and some members of them, they are actually out of the party. Some other very small parties are actually making this fuss. Part of them are vast parties which are belonging to Iraq or belonging to Syria.
and they have no significance. The majority of the Sudanese parties are now joining the dialogue.
Ahmed Bilal, Sudan's information minister, he was speaking with me from the capital, Khartoum. A Zimbabwean man was arrested this week for allegedly insulting President Robert Mugabe using vulgar words. 35-year-old Monda Mbera is expected to appear in court on November 28. Mbera was drinking beer in a bar with some soldiers who called him out and had him arrested when he uttered the offensive word. Kennedy Maseya of the Zimbabwe Lawyers for Human Rights is representing Mr. Mbera.
Basically, yeah, the client was being charged for having uttered some words that they said insulted the head of state, in which he was describing the president using some female anatomy and also describing the current situation in which Zimbabwe is in which also the PF supporters are in, that they were still struggling with trying to earn a living. And they were growing thinner and thinner by the day, despite having celebrated in 2013 that they deported their leader, who happens to be the president of the country, Robert Mugabe, into power. But they are still struggling to make ends meet.
What did the court say about this?
So yesterday, I basically told the police that there was no reason of detaining the client because the prosecution cannot proceed to prosecute an accused person in this case, especially when it comes to Section 33, because the functionary of the prosecutor general, who happens to be prosecutor at Mrel, need the certificate, certifying and giving authority to prosecute. So today, when we appeared at court, the prosecution declined to prosecute, pending the availability of the certificate.
Who was the complainant in this case?
The complainants basically were said to be the state, but the informants were soldiers who resided in Juriboard Point, who the client says they've been fighting him left, right, and center for him to vacate the area.
Kennedy Maseya is the attorney representing a Zimbabwean man accused of insulting President Robert Mugabe. He was speaking from Harare with reporter Jonga Kandimiri of VOA Zimbabwe Service. The United Nations Children's Fund is warning that up to 11 million children in eastern southern Africa are at risk of hunger because of disease and water shortages as a result of this year's strengthening of El Nino weather phenomena. Kenya and Uganda are bracing for floods, while South Africa and Malawi are already grappling with drought. VOA's Jill Craig takes a closer look at El Nino and the impact this event in the Pacific can have on Africa.
Onesmus Wariri, principal meteorologist at the Kenya Meteorological Department, remembers when El Nino hit in 1997 and 1998. Years considered the strongest El Nino on record since 1950, when scientists began recording reliable observations.
There was a lot of rain all over the whole country, which led to destruction of infrastructure, flooding, diseases, loss of lives. So 97 was a serious El Nino.
In 2015 is expected to be another serious El Nino, he says. El Nino is a warming of the central and equatorial parts of the Pacific Ocean. It occurs roughly every 2 to 7 years and can have major effects on weather around the globe, according to Tom DiLiberto, a meteorologist at the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration in Washington, D.C.
When you see this anomalous warming of the ocean temperatures, it can kind of shift around where or how the atmosphere works in the tropics, which can kind of lead to a domino effect affecting weather and climate patterns really far away from the tropical Pacific Ocean.
During an El Nino event, East African countries tend to have heavy rainfall, while Southern Africa, along with Australia and Indonesia, usually experience dryness, even drought and wildfires. Ruiri explains.
What happens is that during El Nino, the weather pattern changes. And for East Africa, we have very warm equatorial Indian Ocean. And if Indian Ocean is very warm, due to evaporation of the ocean water, we have that water blown to the continental East Africa. And that's why we have a lot of rain in East Africa. But to the south, that denies them the moisture. So it tends to be dry in the southern Africa.
But the predictions don't always come true. In 1997, for instance, expected dry conditions in southern Africa never materialized. For all its potential for destruction, El Nino may bring some benefits, too.
Like in northeastern Kenya, it has been very dry. So we expect this rain. The community there can dig dams to harvest that water. We expect pasture to rejuvenate.
Di Liberto says this year could be the third strongest El Nino on record, but that determination cannot be made until early to mid-2016, when all the data is analyzed. Jill Craig, VOA News, Nairobi.
It's time now for Daybreak Africa Sports. Here is Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Very good Thursday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa Sports News, we begin with football. A second-half goal scored by Helder Pelembe propelled hosts Mozambique to a 1-0 triumph against Gabon in their second-round Africa 2018 FIFA World Cup qualifier in Maputo on Wednesday, while Winston Kalengo scored a first-half goal to enable Zambia beat hosts Sudan by a solitary goal in Karima. Today, Thursday, Togo host Uganda, Burundi engage the Democratic Republic of Congo, Namibia encounter Guinea, Benin play Burkina Faso, and Morocco challenge Equatorial Guinea. Meanwhile, defending champions Kenya will open their title defense campaign against perennial rivals Uganda at the Council of East and Central Africa Football Association's CECAFA Senior Challenge Cup in Addis Ababa, Ethiopia on the 22nd of November. CECAFA General Secretary Nicolas Musonye revealed in Nairobi that Burundi and Zanzibar are also in Group B. Group A consists of hosts Ethiopia, Rwanda, Tanzania mainland, and Somalia, while Group C features Sudan, guest side Malawi, South Sudan, and Djibouti. In rugby news, 12 teams are vying to win the 2015 Rugby Africa Men's Sevens Championships starting in Johannesburg, South Africa on Saturday. The two-day contest features Botswana, Kenya, Madagascar, Mauritius, Morocco, Namibia, Nigeria, Senegal, Tunisia, Uganda, Zambia, and Zimbabwe. The winner earns an automatic ticket to join South Africa in presenting Africa's challenge at the 2016 Rio de Janeiro Olympics in Brazil. Finally, the week-long tour of Rwanda cycling contest gets underway in the Rwanda capital Kigali on Sunday. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a good day. And briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. Diplomats in New York say the United Nations could rush peacekeepers into Burundi if calm does not return to the East African nation soon. One option would be sending in soldiers from the neighboring Congo. The African Union also could intervene in Burundi with a peacekeeping force, but Burundian officials say the country is not in flames and there is no chance of mass murder. Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari has sworn in a 36-member cabinet that includes himself as the country's Minister for Petroleum. The ceremony Wednesday in Abuja came more than 5 months after Buhari was inaugurated on May 29th. The president said he wanted to avoid mistakes of the past and find the right persons for each job. Buhari said he will maintain overall control of the key oil sector, but named State Oil Company and Chief Abe Kachiku as his deputy responsible for day-to-day decisions. And rival factions of Al-Shabaab militants have clashed in Somalia in the latest sign of a split over whether to align with Al-Qaeda or the Islamic State. That is it for this Thursday, November 12th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, I'm James Botti in Washington, wishing all of you in Africa a very good day.
The lyrics could be French,
English,
Portuguese,
Bantu,
Arabic, etc.
It is the beat,
the African beat that counts.
The beat does all the translations.
It cuts across all languages and gives us the understanding that this is the African beat.
It is so distinct
and adhesive.
It binds us together.
African beat on the Voice of America, Mondays through Fridays, 0900 and 2000 Universal Time,
with David Bandy.
Celebrate the sounds of Africa today, yesterday, and tomorrow. That's our mission in your show, Music Time in Africa. Hello, I'm your host, Heather Maxwell. Join me every Saturday and Sunday at 1500 and 2000 UTC and discover the best Pan-African music in the world. We play it all right here. Only the best on VOA Africa.